From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
It's the last Thursday of 2015, can you believe it or not? And we're here with episode 99. So many critical points happening right now. Episode 99 of The Dice Men Cometh here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Mark.
And Garth.
And Leon.
And we're here to talk about games, card games, board games, role-playing games, all sorts of games that happen on your tabletop. Now, I was trying to think of something funny to say, but Leon, I've got to give you the quote of the day. When you said, how did it go?
I said that Kung Fu Panda has less pandering in it than the new Star Wars film.
I don't know if you're in the majority there.
I'm absolutely not at all. And it's actually, it was fine, but just eh.
Anyway.
Look, somebody has to be eh. We can't all be hey.
Let's maybe steer clear of that. But Garth.
Yes.
What is coming up on the show today?
We are not talking any pandas. We are talking what we've been playing this week. We're also going to then dip our toe into the little crystal ball of gaming in 2016 and talk about our most anticipated games. And then we will also just round out the year with a whole bunch of Kickstarter news. That should do us, shouldn't we? We might even talk about the competition.
We might. I'm sure we'll have so much to talk to. We'll play a little bit of music, and Leon, you've got some information for us about this song we're about to play.
Yes, the reason I've picked this song today is because on Facebook the other day, somebody was mentioning that they miss Trent's taste in music. And
Does Trent have any taste in music?
And we are anything if not pandering to our fans ourselves. So we just wanted to let the fans know that they will be heard. Now is the time! That was I Will Be Heard by Hatebreed on Edge Radio 99.3 on The Dice Men Cometh. Do you think I've done our fans and Uncle Trent proud then?
Wow.
I think we could hear him, that's for sure.
Yes, yeah. We certainly can. Oh, but I loved how elegantly you said, and this is Hatebreed. Yeah, that's better than what Mark said earlier, which is Hatebreed. They're words that don't go together, son.
Oh, someone put a question mark on the auto cue.
Yeah, there we go.
So anyway, the last week I have been swimming and climbing rocks and in the sun and getting myself all burnt up. What have you lads been playing?
Well, we have been playing the original Doshboard golf game. It's all about strategy.
And this is a game, I remember you told me, Garth, it's not, or it wasn't at that stage we played, it wasn't even on Board Game Geek.
It still is not on Board Game Geek.
Oh my
it has
goodness.
Been submitted, however, it has not been successfully approved and the admins haven't done that. It might be off because it's Christmas and New Year.
But if it's not on Board Game Geek, then is it real?
It is real.
Did you actually play a thing?
We did because
absolutely.
One of my other hobbies, apart from board gaming, is I do play the emerging sport, which is disc golf.
Emerging.
Emerging. Now, this
sound
game...
like another word for nerd.
No. So this game was actually released publicly at the Australian Disc Golf Championships, which happened in Tasmania this year in November. So this game is only about 5 weeks old in the world. So this is really new.
This is cutting edge stuff, guys.
Is it ever? So this is a game that is designed by two friends of mine, actually, who I've known for a few years, Sean and Rick Capalco of Capalco Games. Now, they have been disc golfers for, well, in Rick's case, about 150,000 years, because he'd be older than you, Mark, if you even believe that. Both really good players. But what they've done with this love of disc golf is turned it into an actual board game, which deliberately goes out of its way, I believe, to not mention that it's disc golf, so that it's obviously suitable for the normal golf players as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, because when you look at it, knowing the disc golf background of it that I did, I could look and say, yeah, it's disc golf. But if you didn't know anything about disc golf, you could certainly look at this game and think it's, I don't want to say it's just a golf game, it's a normal golf game.
Yeah, exactly.
It easily translates to that.
Definitely. So let's start with that.
Yeah.
So look, it's a board game. It's got a really quite a large board, and it's all hex-based. So
hang on. A board game With a board.
With a large board. I thought I was quite impressed with how large this board was.
It is a large board.
Which is great.
Beautifully printed. I must admit, the art on this game.
Yes. Well, believe it or not, the art was actually done by another friend and fellow avid disc golfer, Matt. So, you know, it's the whole community effort, this one.
But, so, in other words, this is a game that your friends made, your friends gave you a copy, and now you're talking about it on your radio show. Like,
well, I had to pay an entry fee for the tournament, and part of that was that we have got a copy of this as part of our entrance fee. So, look, there's my conflict of interest. But what I really liked about this game, it is a hex-based game.
Mm.
So the board is all hexes, and essentially the way you will figure out your direction is you'll be able to go in one of the 12 directions. Think of a clock face. You know, you can shoot off at 1 o'clock or 3 o'clock or whatever the direction is that you're going to have.
And watch your six.
Yeah, exactly. Pew, pew.
Yeah.
But it's a 9-hole course, because we're not talking about disc golf specifically, we're just talking about golf in general. It's a hex board, and in order to do your movement, you're going to be rolling dice. Now, this is not a roll and move game, because what you also have is 8 clubs to choose. So 8 discs in the disc golf world, 8 clubs in the normal golf world.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So you've got putters, you've got mid-rangers, you've got drivers, and you've got your max drivers for the ones that will try and get your object, ball or disc, long and straight, hopefully. You then roll 2 dice after you've chosen the club card that you want to use. You've got a blue dice. That will determine the distance that you go based on the certain stats of the card you're using.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got this annoying red dice, which will tell you how far to the left or right of where you've been aiming are you actually going to end up. And when you see this board, and you'll see it when it goes up on Board Game Geek, I'm sure, there's a huge amount of water, there's a huge amount of trees, there's a lot of elevation in this game that you've got to account for as well. So you're never going to really end up where you want to be. You might end up close, and if you are very lucky and you choose your discs well and you roll well, you'll end up where you want to be. But more often than not, you'll end up kind of close-ish. Now, this game plays really quickly. You know, you can play it solo because you're just trying to better your score. When I've done that, I've played it in half an hour or so, but Mark, you and I played it a little bit, and it was probably done 45 minutes to an hour, I reckon. Is that right?
Yeah, and I mean, my immediate thought was, I used to like playing golf games on my computer.
Yep.
On my Amiga 500, for those people that are as old as me. And the great thing about golf games on the computer, much more so than golf in real life, I could sort of get the hang of how the mouse works and the golf club swinging, and I could get pretty close. This to me far more mirrored what I was like on the real golf course, where I'd step out and I could hit the ball quite a long way, but when you talk about which direction it's going to go, it could be anywhere. And I really liked with the, you've got the selection of clubs,
mm-hmm.
and so you're using the, was it D12?
Yep.
And often 1, 2, 3, 4 might be the same distance, and even like 9, 10, 11, 12 or 10, 11, 12 would be the same, sort of the maximum and the minimum.
Yep.
So you don't get a huge amount of variation, which makes a lot of sense, because the last thing you want to do is hit your golf ball and only goes like 5 meters because you happen to roll the one.
Yep.
So it makes a lot of sense how they've done it, the statisticalness of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like that variation provided by the red die where, yeah, I can throw it a mile, but oh my God, it's gone off way to the left and it's in the river. And that to me really reflected what golf is like in real life, where you, unless you're a really, really, really good golfer, you don't have that level of control. Surprisingly, I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe I don't want to play 18 holes, but the 9 holes we played in 45 or so minutes, I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I agree. And the great thing about this for me is that it plays up to 4 players. When you've got your 8 club cards, every single one of those is different.
Mm.
So you haven't got the same set of 8 repeated 4 times. Every single one has a different stat so that you can, in essence, replay this game and have 4 completely different experiences just by choosing the 4 different potential decks of cards.
And so many times, just like real golf, even golf, not disc golf, you know, I know that I can hit a good 7 iron and it's going to go,
however
for
far.
Me, you know, I can spot the distance and go, yeah, that's about a 7 iron. But it's always the case of, my 7 iron's not quite going to make it, but I know if I go my 5, it's going to be too far. And you get caught in that no man's land of, I'm going to have to hit this bigger club, but I'm going to have to hit it a little bit less than full, or I'm going to have to go this smaller club and know that I'm going to be short. And how many times was it, I need to go eight distance, and to get an eight on a particular club, I had to roll like a one or a two, or like it. To me, it reflected real life really well, actually.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I found very rarely did you know, okay, I'm going to go for this club straight away. You always had to stop and have a bit of a think, which was great. I also like the fact that there's three levels of play in this, so that it makes it a bit more of a broad appeal. Yes. Because, you know, arguably there aren't a huge number of people who are going to focus and analyse every little sort of detail as we may. But there's the beginner's rules, which is essentially you roll and you see where you go. There's no elevation. There's still the hazards like water and the trees, but it doesn't have penalties attached to it as much. Then you've got the advanced rules, which are the ones we played, where it introduces height and elevation. Mm. So you look at the board and there's clearly different heights there. So if you're going downhill, you'll go one extra distance. If you're going uphill, you've got to roll double distance to be able to go up in essence. You've then also got something that I think is, again, true in all forms of golf, is that you're able to control, I guess, your left and your rights a little bit more. You're able to put dog legs into your shot, which opens up this to be a lot more of a strategic game, because you're not just always hitting straight. You're able to say, well, I'm going to hit straight for that sort of half a dozen hexes, and then I've got to sort of click it off to the left or the right.
Use your draw or your fade, correct, as they talk about in golf.
Yeah. Look, it also has a wind mechanic, which is great because it just, again, throws another variable in there. You've also got the option to play the professional rules, which is where the wind is introduced, but it also introduces the lost disc or the lost golf club mechanic, which is essentially if you hit a tree or you go in the water and you'd roll wrong, that card is out of the game. You can't use that club for the rest of the game, which is a really strong penalty.
That simulates you losing your nut and smashing it.
Yeah, going old John Daly on it.
That's right.
So, look, I think this game, for what Rick and Sean have done, they've put in a lot of effort in this, and the maths that they've done to make sure that the four different colours of clubs are statistically pretty even, but having enough variety so that you could say, well, I want to play green because it worked well for me last time. The fact that they've got it as beginner, advanced, and professional rules so that it is accessible to all types. I think that's great. And to be honest, I haven't seen a game like this that simulates golf in this kind of fashion. So,
I was going to say, all the golf games that I've seen, to me, they more simulate mini golf than this, which seems to be quite a true take on golf, whether it's golf or disc golf. I think they've done an amazing job. And I wouldn't be surprised if this does really well for them.
Yeah, well, I certainly
hope so. If they can get some wider distribution, maybe.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, in all seriousness, disc golf is a small sport in Australia. Mm. But in North America and in Europe, it's gangbusters. It's one of the fastest growing sports, full stop.
Wow.
So there's a massive potential audience there. These guys are from the States, so they've got connections back there. So obviously, hopefully, they'd be able to get it out there and get it to a wider audience, because golf in itself is a pretty popular sport. So this kind of game would be really popular for Father's Day and that kind of thing, I reckon.
Leon, do you play golf?
I do not. I've hit the driving range a couple of times in my life, and that was a good laugh. I have actually played disc golf because the course is around the corner from my house.
It is.
And I have played the once or the twice. I was horrendous at it and nearly threw my shoulder out, but it was still enjoyable. And this game does sound interesting, especially I do like the sound of the big hex board that you've got to use for it. We may be able to get my Memoir 44 stuff on there, I think.
Yeah, there we go.
and customise this a little bit more, and yeah, we can go from there.
Definitely. And they've been lovely enough to give us a copy as part of our 12 Games of Christmas.
That's
so
right.
I've got one in shrink at home, ready to go out to someone.
Lovely. This is going to be a collector's edition.
Is it ever? First edition.
Is it signed by the designers?
No, it's still in shrink. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Now, I was going to quickly mention, because we've been talking about what we've been playing, we played another game of The Gallerist the other evening. I will declare my conflict of interest here.
Yes, that you love The Gallerist.
I won.
You want to marry The Gallerist.
I won again, yes. And I beat Trent again, which is so enjoyable. Not so close as last time, but look, I had a ball with this game again.
Mm.
Again, it's out on the table and it just looks amazing.
Yep.
Ian O'Toole, a fellow Australian, has done a brilliant job with the art and the, I don't know if he did the graphic design as well, but this game just showcases itself.
Mm.
It's amazing to look at. It does look like a work of art on the table. It's got a lot of moving parts like most of the Vital Lacerda games, but it's not as complex as something like Kanban, where you really struggle to get your head around how things intermesh. And I think after the second game, we got a more of an idea of how things do work together. I still can't work out how I quite won and what I did that others didn't do.
He got the most points, Leon.
Apart from that...
It's always a good strategy, I thought.
Yeah, in terms of strategies, that's right. But, what was it, three hours or so it took us?
Yeah, it's probably three and a half, as opposed to the
five or six.
Yeah, we finished at
1 o'clock
in the morning instead of 2:30, 3 o'clock, yeah. Which is nice.
But it was great. Look, you know, we got it down. We didn't really have to have much of a rules refresh. I'd love to play it again.
Yep.
Maybe I won't even win this time. Who knows? But, I would like to get an in-depth review down, but it is such an in-depth game that I think we probably need to play it once or twice before we get to that.
Yeah.
Look, if you haven't seen this game, you've got to check it out. Mm. And you can check out a couple of photos on our Instagram account. We now have an Instagram account.
Do we? Okay. That's good.
And it's got a couple of photos of the Gallerist on it. But there will be more. That was The Gallerist by Vital Lacerda. Leon, now you've been away having a summer holiday. Must have squeezed in a couple of games.
I did. I went up north. To the coast of Tasmania.
North Tasmania.
Yes, indeed. Wow. It actually was. It was the nicest time I've been up there by a mile.
I was going to say, Tasmania's all coast.
True. Oh, yeah, that drive in the middle is terribly exciting. But once you get to the ocean, yeah, it's lovely stuff. So I went up there with my wife's family and some of our extended family. We went to their shack down at Sisters Beach, and at night time we did get a few games in. We started out with Age of War, which is just as simple as it gets. But
yeah, a little dice game, yeah?
Yeah, but it's I think, something that everyone should have in their arsenal, because everyone likes to roll a dice from time to time, and it does fit in your pocket pretty much. So that went down well. We moved on to something a bit more advanced from there. We went on to Splendor.
Yep.
And I played this with people that, again, normally to you know, we know Monopoly, we know Scrabble, we know nothing else. Got out Splendor, explained the rules, which takes about 30 seconds. They still did look kind of a little bit puzzled, but within 5 minutes, they were leaning over the table at each other going, no, that's my gem, I wanted to do that. Oh, you've taken my card. It's like,
fantastic.
This is exactly what should happen.
Yeah. We've got you now.
From that, we went on to Concept, a game we've talked about a few times on here. It's a game that I've never actually followed the rules of this game in the slightest, but it's just something that if you've got a group of people around, especially if they're not gamers, it's basically charades, except you use pitches and kind of go from there. And we had a lot of fun with that. I was trying to do the most complicated ones I possibly could, and even with like younger kids, they still kind of wrapped their head around it, so that was all right. And then we finished the evening at the wee hours of the morning with a game of Mysterium, which we've talked about recently. And the last time we played, Garth, you were the ghost.
Yes.
And did, as I found out, an absolute pearler of a job, because this time I was the ghost, and my God, was that game difficult.
Yeah.
Those cards might as well have been just blank. They could have had all these pictures on them, but everyone I was handing them to going like, there you go, there's a picture of a evil guy, and the guy I'm trying to get you to pick is clearly an evil guy, and they would just look at it and go, you see that tiny thing in the corner there?
Yeah. It's amazing how thick you realise your friends and family are playing this game as the ghost.
And the amount of times you have to shut your mouth because they go, oh, no, I think it's this. And you're like, yes, you've done it exactly. And then they've overthought it and just gone on to somewhere completely and utterly different. But, yeah, no, all those games went down very, very well with the non-gaming family.
Wonderful.
So, yeah, so it was much fun to have by all.
Fantastic. Look, it's great that we've all been playing lots of games over Christmas. Now I've got some sad news.
Yeah.
This week, we lost, you know, we like a bit of heavy music here at The Dice Man Cometh. This week, we lost one of the greats of heavy metal, Lemmy Kilmister, from Motorhead and a number of other acts. So,
yeah, one of the Mount Rushmores of music in general, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we'll come back and talk about more games in a moment.
That was Ace of Spades by Motorhead on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with The Dice Men Cometh. So RIP Lemmy. It's a sad state of affairs all around. Actually, a few moments literally before I found out the news of his passing, I was talking over Facebook with some of my friends, just talking nonsense as we tend to do. And we got onto the subject of what's the greatest heavy metal song of all time. And my vote was for that, Ace of Spades. And 5 minutes later, I read Facebook and went...
So it's your fault?
I believe it may have been. Wow. So the end of 2015 is a bit... But you know what? I hear there's another year next year. And I hear some games might be coming out. And
whoa.
Segue.
I think it's something we might talk about.
Aren't we just lucky? So, yeah, we are going to talk about our 2016 most anticipated games because... why the hell not?
Yeah.
We've got, you know, a couple of hours of 2015 to go. And
well, no doubt by the time this podcast comes out...
it'll be March.
It may almost be 2017.
Yeah.
Given we have been having some technical difficulties with getting the podcast files from the radio station here. But never mind. We will continue on.
We will indeed. So, Mark, do you and the frog in your throat want to kick us off here with what you're looking forward to next year?
Well, look... let me mention one.
Let me mention one. Nice. Yeah. Wow. Oh, come on.
And this is one we have talked about a little bit. It's actually come out in 2015.
Oh.
But I'm looking forward to it in 2016. Maybe even tomorrow. No, the next day. Maybe even Saturday night, the 2nd of 2016. The 2nd of January 2016, that is.
It's gone well, isn't
seamless.
It?
Seamless. Yeah.
Because that is a game... that I've been very excited about for some time. And it's a game, Leon.
Yes.
That you've recently purchased.
I did. I put down the hard earned to get
this
done.
Time Stories. Now, I know there's a lot of word on the internet that, you know, this is the worst value for money in a game there is. Because you play it once and it's done.
Yep.
And then there's an expansion and you play that once and it's done. But the concept itself... intrigues me so much. I cannot wait to play this game.
Yeah, no, it does look very interesting. And just on top of that, before we talk a bit more about it, the concept of it, yes, the least value for money out of any board game out there. As far as I'm concerned, I think that's a moot point to anything in the board gaming world because, I mean, you guys have kids. You take your kids to see a film, like at the movies, there's $100.
We'll talk about bad value. Kids are... the worst value.
Well, them as well.
They cost a fortune and you only get to raise them once.
My point being is that you go to the film, that's an hour and a half, 2 hours, done, end of story. Whereas this game cost, I think it was about $70 or something like that.
Yep.
There are more games coming. This we expect is going to take us a good 4 or 5 hours.
Yep.
It's going to be something we're going to remember, I can guarantee, whether it's good or bad.
Yes.
So unless this game was $200, that point of, oh, it's not value for money... especially when people try to say that with things like Sherlock as well. Just like, no, just be quiet. Experience is worth more than money.
Well, and a lot of people will pay $90, $100 for a video game, put it in, play a few hours and go, oh, this is crap.
Yep.
You know, your dough is done at that stage.
Mm.
I guess you can hand it on to someone else or sell it secondhand, just as you can with board games.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
Know? And I think that's one of the great things about this game is we can play it. There's no writing. There's no tearing up. Well, at least I'm guessing there's not. You know, tearing up of cards. So it's a great purchase secondhand potentially for someone for them to be able to live it, for them to be able to pass on to their gaming friends.
Yep, and there's plenty of expansions. I mean, they're going to release expansion after expansion.
Well, I think
there's already a new one recently announced.
Wasn't there a Dragon-y type one?
The Dragon ones literally could be out right now, and then the other one is out already, which as soon as we play on Saturday night, I can guarantee I'll be on my phone going yes or no on that purchase there.
For sure.
So it is a 2015 game, but I am calling it as one of my most anticipated plays that will occur in 2016.
Well, to be fair as well, I normally get everything I can local, but I did have to order this one online. I've never seen this one in a store anywhere in Australia. So as far as I'm concerned, we can call it 2016 game.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
So, Garth.
Yes. Well, I put the most exhaustive list together out of the three of us. So
look at you and all your research.
Let's start with one of them, shall we?
One of them? Well, one of them is... look, it's this one I introduced to you guys a couple of days ago over our little chats just to... finally do a bit of half-assed preparation. It's Fantasy Flight's Star Wars Rebellion game, which, you know, is by Stephen Kimball and good old Corey Knizia, who's, you know, obviously basically does everything at Fantasy Flight. Essentially, it's the Empire versus the Rebels. It's a fantastic concept for a 2-to-4-player game where there are about 170 minis, including Death Stars, and essentially the Empire is trying to scout out and destroy the Rebel base. and the rebels are trying to hide from the Empire, switch systems to their cause. And I guess you described it quite well, Leon, in that it's sort of a Star Wars Twilight struggle sort of...
War of the Rings, Twilight Imperium had a child type situation.
Exactly right. So it's very much, I guess, like you know, the War of the Ring games as well.
Yeah.
But this just looks fantastic. It's going to be mammoth. I have put in a little please hold for this game because it's $170 Australian dollars.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now it's about $170 to $100 US. So our exchange rate isn't doing us any favours at the moment.
No.
But this game just looks awesome. Fantasy Flight know what they're doing. To have all those little minis, and essentially the board is 32 different star systems. Wow. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's plays in about 4 or 5 hours. So this is one of those epic game day kind of games. Slated for the first quarter of 2016. So God knows what that'll mean for us down here.
And they're probably wishing that they hadn't, you know, gone down this property and gone down a property maybe that had a bit of room for expansions. What do you think?
Well, they've got enough other products with full of expansions, haven't they? Surely.
Oh, look, I mean, you know, this is eminently expandable.
Yes.
So it's going to do really well for them.
Mm.
Leon?
Well, before I move on to mine, yeah, the board is literally kind of like all the planets in the Star Wars galaxy, so they could very easily put an overlay onto that for different films. And people have got to remember as well that outside of the films that people are mad for,
yes,
there are books that people
There's
are...
a whole expanded there
are
universe.
Books that people will swear to God are 20 times better than what the films are, as well as there's some video games that are very similar. So if it takes off, which hopefully it does, yeah, they could just keep pumping stuff into it.
Any board that has the Kessel system on it, I'm there in 12 parsecs.
Yeah, good luck. They sound like words.
All right, Leon, what do you got for us?
Let's see, out of my nice little list here, all of mine are games that I already backed on Kickstarter, so I could literally sit back, put the feet on the desk and go, yeah, my year's taken care of.
Actually, I think all of mine are ones you've backed on Kickstarter as well, Leon.
Well, that's good to know. I wonder how you're going to get to play them.
Yeah.
But yeah, so let's. The first one we'll go with, the one I think that's coming the closest, and that's Besieged Sons of the Abyss. So it's by Cool Mini or Not,
yep.
So guess what?
It's got minis?
It's got minis in it, and there's going to be heaps of them. This game, the best way to describe it from what I've seen, is kind of a fantasy version of one of my favourite games ever in Ghost Stories.
Yep.
And that you play the part of different fantasy characters in a big castle town, and from the outside in all your different directions, you've got your orcs, your goblins, your dragons, your all sorts of blah coming to get you. And you've got to send out a runner, I believe, to get an ancient artifact to fight them off. So you've got to survive for a certain amount of time in this city with the characters that you've got fending off these guys, waiting for him to come back.
Mm.
And then you've got to defend him when he comes back and he's on his way. And because it's Cool Mini or Not, and like I said, there's lots of minis, and I got onto the Kickstarter version, there's a plethora of different bad guys and characters and just heaps and heaps and heaps of stuff. So it's one of those games that if the game is good, and from what I can tell, it looks simple enough that it should be good, that the replay value is just through the roof with all the different things you can do. And I think that one's only, I'd like to say, a month or two away. It's not very far at all. I did have the exact release date, but it's gone completely from my head.
Look, that is certainly not one that's on my radar.
Right.
But one is, we've talked about this guy already today in the show, Vital Lacerda.
Yep.
He's just going from strength to strength. And I'm looking at Lisboa.
Okay.
So it's a game about the reconstruction of Lisboa. I think that's also Lisbon, is that right? That's the Portuguese name of Lisbon.
It is indeed.
After the great earthquake of 1755, where an earthquake of magnitude somewhere between 8.5 and 9 on the Richter scale that wasn't invented back then, and then a tsunami, and then 3 days of fires basically destroyed the city. And then the aristocracy, the royalty, everyone got together to work on rebuilding the city with engineers and architects. And we, as the players, are members of this nobility that are working to use our influence, because, of course, we don't do the work ourselves.
No,
that's for lesser
that'd
people.
That'd be silly.
We use our influence to develop this new city now. We've seen the Gallerist. We've seen Kanban. We've seen what Vital Lacerda can do, and almost more importantly, we've seen what Ian O'Toole, the amazing Australian artist, can do. He's also involved in this game. I'm really excited about this because Vital is just getting better at fine-tuning things and getting the gameplay more and more engaging. I think this is going to blow us away.
Yeah.
I mean, the Gallerist obviously has the art theme, which is easy to get the art in the game. I'm really, really excited. There's some pictures of this around. Not a lot that you can see, not a lot of detail at the moment, but I'm really excited for Lisboa by Vital Acerta. Eagle Griffin Games are doing that one. I'm not even sure if it's going to be kickstarted or whether it'll just be a normal release.
Well, I was actually not ignoring you, Mark. I was actually jumping on my phone because I've been speaking with Ralph. Now, Ralph is the vice president of Eagle Griffin Games.
Yes.
And I just had a chat with him only a day or two ago. And
how is old Ralph?
Ralph is fantastic, thanks. and they've said that they will be kickstarting Lisboa in a few months.
Okay.
Now, I'll just interrupt because I also had a Vital game on my list, which was Vinhos, which is about the Portuguese...
Already a game.
Exactly. So it's the new deluxe edition of that that's coming out next year. So that's why I just thought I'd tack it on to the end of yours. So they will be kickstarting the deluxe edition of Vinhos in a few weeks. So that'll be in January, according to him. And then Lisboa in a couple of months. So first half of next year is a Vitalathon.
Fantastic. And do you know, is the deluxe version of Vinhos, is that sort of like the combination of Vinhos and the Tuscany expansion all in one? Because the Tuscany expansion is...
You're not getting confused
with viticulture, are you? Yeah. Let's just rewind that bit. We'll edit that bit out. I didn't say that all, okay? So, Garth, what's next on your list?
Vinhos is basically... It's the deluxe edition of a game that was released a couple of years ago. Better components, a few more extended bits and pieces. So I won't go into that too much because... Either of these games, Lisboa or Vinhos, are going to be awesome.
Yeah,
and look, just the theme he brings to these games. I mean, you know, who would be thinking, yeah, we're getting excited about rebuilding a city that was destroyed by an earthquake?
I would be.
Clearly you are. And getting wine. But then again, who thought I'd be interested about running a gallery? So anyway, another one I've been very excited about is a Kickstarter as well. And fortunately, this Kickstarter is making its way to Tasmania. It's by Sierra Madre Games and Phil Eklund. It's High Frontier 3rd Edition. So I am going into space with this game because this game just looks crazy. The board is just a plethora of lines and planets and squiggles, and the work that you need to do to construct a rocket, get a rocket into space, build bases, don't have your rocket blow up on you, all of this kind of stuff, just sounds really, really intense. It sounds like a very heavy way to spend a half a day.
I was going
to
say, this is like physics the game, isn't it? Interstellar physics.
So. It almost sounds like rocket science, which I believe is difficult. I mean, there's no brain surgery.
No.
I believe rocket science is up there.
Exactly right. So look, my little cut and paste job. So it's a space exploration game. Players take control of different space enterprises trying to establish factories on planets and asteroids. Each player begin with 3 water tanks, which is your fuel. In turn, each player uses 2 action points to do some of the 8 available actions, move spaceships, buy new technologies, etc., etc., etc. And then once one of the players has built enough bases on enough of the different planets, the game will end. But you just have a look at the board on this one. It is just ridiculous. So there is going to be a whole bunch of pain involved in learning this game, but I think the end result's going to be spectacular.
I know this game is very highly thought of. Even some quite thick ex-hosts of this game really hold it in high regard.
Well, he did back it, so that's how it's coming to Tassie.
Yeah, fantastic. Leon?
Let's see, what next? Oh, we'll go The Others' 7 Sins, which you wouldn't believe it. It's a cool mini or not game.
Oh, really?
That was on Kickstarter. I just wanted to say before I speak about this game that I'll play anything. Yeah. I'll play these Euro games that you boys are talking about. It's just that they don't invite me. They just think, oh, he's young and he's out there doing his young craze. No, I will play anything. It's just I happen to buy the big shiny games more often than not.
High Frontiers does have tiny little plastic rocket ships if you want your mini fix.
I don't need my mini fix, but I'll take it.
And Gallerist has paintings and works of sculpture and even digital art, Leon.
Digital. I know that word.
Digital art, yeah.
So anyway, yes.
No, not porn.
No. Anyway, The Others' 7 Sin, a game by Eric Lang, who is probably the man at the moment these days with all the games that he's brought out.
He's Mr. Meanie, isn't he?
Pretty much, yes. And he just happens to make games that are also very, very good.
Mm.
So I've talked about this game on the show before. It's where you take control of the agents of faith in the last human city on Earth, well, the last free city on Earth, and you have to defend it against the forces of the seven deadly sins and all the monsters and all the blah, blah, blah. So it looks very similar to like a game of Descent, but more of a modern aesthetic with demons and whatever have you. And again, it's coming from Kickstarter and with all the different stuff in it, so that's another one that I'm looking forward to.
Well, this one made, what, $800,000? Something crazy.
It made something really, really crazy. But this came off Besieged as well as another zombie side and everything else that did well for them as well.
Excellent. Now, we've got quite a lot more to talk about the upcoming games of 2016. But before we do, some more sad news this week. Not only did we lose Lemmy, we also lost John Bradbury, who, you might be saying, he was the drummer in the Specials, and they were special. That was Ghost Town by the Specials, the ska revival band from Two Tone in the UK, late 70s, and we did say farewell to John Bradbury, the drummer, this week. Not a good week for musicians dying.
No, not at all.
Anyway, you are with the Dice Men Cometh, not a musical obituary show, but a board and card game show on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and we are reviewing the games we're most looking forward to in 2016. Now, Garth, unlike Leon and I, have done a reasonable amount of research, seems you've done a ridiculous amount of research.
I did. I did 4 pages of research here, which is too double-sided. So thankfully it was quiet at work today and I was able to do that.
So we know we have, you know, the big three or four that we'll get to in a minute, but you've got some also-rans.
Yeah, look, there's a couple that I am excited and curious about. And I guess one of them would be the This War of Mine board game.
Oh, God, yes. I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, so the board game implementation of what was arguably one of the most emotive apps and little computer games that I played in this year. Mm. Just where you are playing survivors in this war-torn city that's brought up in, I guess, two halves. You've got the half that you play during the day where all you're doing is you're stuck in your house. You can't go anywhere. So for the half of that, all you're trying to do is board up your house, get fresh water, somehow find some food, survive the raiders and all of that kind of thing. And then it all turns to crap at night time because every night you have to send someone out to go scavenging and you have to go to these increasingly more difficult places to get food and loot and all this kind of stuff. And then chances are you'll come back and you've been raided and someone's been shot or dead. This game is heavily, heavily depressive at times.
Yeah.
It's incredibly exciting. It is tense. And I am so curious to see how this is going to be implemented because the designer, Mikkel Orax, and I'll apologize for that in advance, but he's the one who designed Niroshima Hex. So he's got a little bit of a gaming credential. Yeah. He's currently self-publishing this, but we'll see how that goes. And the main thing is he's saying this game, you'll be able to basically play it out of the box, slap it down on the table, no rule set, no sort of sitting around and this is how you play. It's just going to be that kind of you get straight into it. So if he pulls this off, this game will be phenomenal. Leon.
Sounds very interesting. Just for time reasons, I'm just going to hammer through everything I've got here because some of the big games that we all want to speak about are on all of our lists.
Yep.
A game I found out recently called Unusual Suspects that came out this year that I'd never heard of. Saw a couple of videos for them. Seemed very interesting. Simple deduction game.
I was going to say, is it based on the movie?
No.
It's oh, no, that was The Usual Suspects.
Yes. Oh. Some big expansions coming out next year. The first expansion for Comet, which is one of my favourite games, which adds a new Black Pyramid and some new big baddies and stuff in it, which is going to be cool. A Spyfall expansion, I believe, has just come out in the States, which just adds a few more locations. A new Elder Sign expansion, Omens of Ice. I know nothing about it, and guess I'm guessing Yetis are probably in it, which is fine by me. I like me some Elder Sign. Yep. Eldritch Horror, exploring Under the Pyramids, I believe it's called. Oh. Something to that effect. So, and we've talked about it before. I'm a big fan of Eldritch Horror. Yes. Once we get that, I will get you lads around for a big old 8-player game of that.
Oh, nice.
And we'll see how we go from there. Some games that have come out previously that I have not played yet that I plan on playing next year. Roll for the Galaxy.
Yep.
Arctic Scavengers.
Yes.
Elysium. Alien Frontier, Steampunk Rally. Games I've been very, very interested in, but for some reason, haven't pulled that old Leon trigger of buying them myself. I don't know why, but they're the games I want to give it a crack at.
No, we can help you. I've got a couple of those.
Yeah, I was going to say. I think I know somebody that has nearly all of them, except for Steampunk Rally, because that's a newer one.
Yeah.
And then just quickly, two that I've also backed on Kickstarter that are coming that I've talked about before. Lobotomy and Pandemonium are both on their way, and we'll just scratch that horror itch in 2016. And that's me done.
Look, I'll bring in the Seventh Continent.
Oh, big
it's
guns,
the,
eh?
It's the, again, another story-based game. And it to me, it's like someone took the Pathfinder adventure card game, so beloved of myself, and made it a lot less expensive, yes, a lot less time to set up, and actually made it sound exciting. It's the early 20th century. You've decided to sail back to the newly discovered Seventh Continent to attempt to lift the terrible curse that has struck you since your return from the previous expedition. So it has a bit of an almost Cthulhu-ish element. I believe the Seventh Continent is referring to Antarctica. And again, it's a solo or co-op game that, in a, that, not deck building, but the card-based adventure game like Pathfinder, where they're going to expand it. It's got a huge amount of expandability, but, you know, I don't think there's no great board. It seems a lot simpler implementation of that idea. I don't know why I'm excited by it. It's been talked about as like inspired by the fighting fantasy role-playing books. So I don't know whether it's going to have even more of a role-playing feel to it. I know, to me, it just sounds really exciting.
Well, yeah, it's basically, from what I've read, it's basically like a 20-hour board game because you can pack it away in this specific save state, which they say, just like a video game. And it is just like one of those choose-your-own-adventure books or an RPG in this day and age, except the board will tell the story as it is, and you will build the continent as you go along with all the... And the curses you can add on to them, which I think from the Kickstarter, there was like three, maybe four. And then there's more to be added to it as well. So you can add them to them. And yeah, so I'm looking forward to, I'll probably have a game going with you boys and some of my other friends as well at the same time.
Fantastic.
And just we'll see if we go from there.
And for something that you say is not a board game, they're saying, because it comes with about 1,000 cards, if not more.
Yeah, it's 1,000.
Each card is about the size of your regulation coaster.
Mm.
They're saying a full game of this will be about 2 meters by 1 meter.
Yeah.
So that's a hell of a big table space for something with no board. It's going to be a pretty impressive sight when it's at the table.
Yeah, look, I can't wait. I'm really excited. And I'm so glad you've backed it, Leon. You've probably saved me thousands of dollars there, because we all know the rabbit hole that I've gone down with Pathfinder.
And just the things that you can do with it, the fact that, like you said, if the board's getting too big for your table, you can condense previous areas you've visited back into like a pile of cards and back into the box because of this kind of save state system they have, which to me just sounds like nonsense. It doesn't look like it's possible, but yeah, it should be amazing.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to go into sci-fi world. And I am going to go to a path that I don't normally go down before or ever, which is Star Trek and Star Trek Frontiers.
What?
Ooh. Yeah, which is the Vlada and Andrew Parks WizKids game. And it's essentially
the Mage Knight
done in the Star Trek universe. So it's designed for 1 to 4 players. It is cooperative. It is competitive. It has solo scenarios. But it just... You know, I haven't played Mage Knight because it's a 10 or 12 hour epic. I want to see how they just basically take the best bits of Mage Knight, re-implement it into a Star Trek sci-fi universe. They get this right, this will be just smashing it with Vlada at the helm. How can it not?
I had completely forgotten about that one. You're right, that does sound
really
interesting.
It's amazing
really
what research does.
Yes.
The more research I do, the more my memory gets better.
Look, we're going to run out of time eventually, but a couple more. I'll mention one. Stonemaier Games, obviously with Jamie Stegmaier, sorry, and his brother Jason, his lesser known brother Jason.
You mean Jason?
Oh, don't go there. Scythe.
Yep.
Stonemaier Games produces amazing games, amazing components, in-depth play. This is sort of a alternative world 1920s Europe with sort of steampunky elements. It's a 4X game, but it's not set in space. It's actually, as we said, set in Europe in the 1920s, a time of farming and war, broken hearts and rusted gears. And to me, it just sounds really interesting. I mean, they've done really great with a lot of their other games. And this one, it was a big Kickstarter hit.
Mm-hmm.
Did you back this one, Leon?
I did.
Yes.
Oh, you did as well.
Yeah, we've got two of them. Because I knew you'd have done it. And then I looked on there. I think we discussed this on the show, the value for money of it. Like, the shipping was next to nothing.
Yes.
And for what you get in that box, I thought, well, you know, even if I only ever play a Garth's copy, I'm sure I can probably sell that one. No trouble.
This game looks phenomenal. So, not surprisingly, on all our lists. Now, another one I'm just going to throw out there. Because I doubt it's on any of your lists. And this is more of a, I'm really curious to see how it plays out, which is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shadows of the Past.
Oh.
So this is done by Kevin, not Bloody, but Kevin Wilson.
Oh, Fantasy Flight?
Yeah, exactly right. But this is actually going to be an IDW and Pandasaurus production. So this is a scenario-driven campaign version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the comic that was done through IDW. Yes. So basically, it'll be for up to four players to play as your favourite turtles, or you get to be the Shredder, the villain.
Leonardo. This sounds like Teenage Mutant Ninja Descent.
Exactly right. So I'm very curious to see how this all plays out, because I trust Kevin Wilson as a designer. Yeah. He's had some fantastic games. I just think it'll be a laugh. I just hope this works out really well, because I reckon it'll be a lot of fun.
Leon, do you have anything left before we get to the... I'm calling it the big guy.
Oh, well, the only one I could think of off the top of my head was the big guy.
Yeah.
So, come on.
Okay, we'll go to Garth. Mr. Research.
You guys are thick. Yes. So I've done a 3 words and one number bit of research.
Ooh.
And the first word is pandemic. The second word is legacy.
Yes.
The third word is season. And the fourth, which is a number, is two. Now, I refuse to believe... Actually, no, I don't. But I can't believe that you guys haven't put this on your... This will be an amazing 2016.
Well, look, probably the reason that I did overlook that was because...
Because it's not a Board Game Geek.
Was because of the big guy.
Okay. All right, we'll talk about the big guy because, look, how can you not be excited about whatever season two of whatever version of Pandemic Legacy will be released? But there will be a season two.
Oh, look, clearly... But we're talking about Plaid Hat Games.
Oh, yes.
Rob Davio, the creator of the Legacy system, and his Seafall, a Legacy game. So he's had his Legacy system, which he's adapted to Risk. He's adapted to Pandemic. This is a game built from the ground up with the Legacy system in mind. And to me, that's the number one thing that excites me is Pandemic Legacy is such an amazing, amazing game. Created such excitement, such anticipation.
Well, it's definitely in most people's top two of the year, isn't it?
Absolutely. All the people that count. But this is, you know, this is a game he's created from scratch with this system in mind. Mm. And funnily enough, it's another 4X game set in an Age of Sail world, reminiscent of our world, but not quite like our world, where the world is starting to claw its way out of a dark age and has begun to rediscover seafaring technology. Players take on the role of a mainland empire that consults with a consortium of advisors to discover new islands, explore those islands, develop trade, send out raiding parties, take part in ship-to-ship combat, and more. As in Risk Legacy and Pandemic Legacy, co-designed by Rob Davio, Seafall evolves as the game is played, setting grudges into the history of the game and building a different narrative at every table. It sounds to me like a civilization game where there's no going back.
Yeah.
And that really excites me as well. So the fact that it's been built from the ground up with the legacy system in mind, but it's a whole new take of that. Yeah. It sounds like nothing that has been done.
I agree. And what gets me really excited about this is that having not played Risk Legacy, this will be my first non-co-op legacy game where all of you bastards are going down because you're all evil and you're all against me.
Well, put it this way. It's Plaid Hat.
Yes.
It's Legacy and it's Pirates, Pirates, Pirates.
And it's Rob Davio. Yeah. I mean, all of that is a pretty good combination. So it'd be this will fly off the shelves.
And just in 5 seconds, Plaid Hat, this year, I hope, will at least find out, or maybe release, the second Crossroads game.
Oh, yeah.
Because that will be a monster, if it even exists still.
Yeah.
Exactly right. And then finally, just to get some electronic gaming in there, 2016 should see the Seven Wonders app
And then it might even see your Pathfinder Adventure Card Game app.
Maybe.
They're only about 100 years late.
There are so many amazing games coming up. We've run out of time to talk to them. For anyone, if you ever hear this podcast, you might know we've got a competition running. It'll probably be long and truly over by the time you listen to this, but hey, who knows? It's on our Facebook page.
Yep.
Check out our Instagram account because we'll probably post some photos there. Facebook, have an amazing New Year's. Hey, you just had an amazing New Year's. Congratulations. And we'll see you again soon.
See you in 2016.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.